Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on October 23rd, 2020, from my home studio here in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a look at security threats facing the November 3rd election, what local officials in one county are doing to prevent any issues on Election Day, and quell concerns. We listen to a discussion on the importance of rural broadband expansion efforts, and we hear about how the pandemic is causing stress and anxiety among children. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a 1 to 3 minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Leave your name, where you're calling from, and what's going on in your world. You all going trick-or-treating? You know, what's going on? Are people going to trick-or-treat this year? Are you unemployed? Are you still working? Are you testing negative for COVID? Are you socially distancing? Tell us what your daily life is like. 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 3,545 deaths, and currently there are 161,235 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of October 23rd at 4 p.m. Our current percent positive rate is 14.2%. The percent positive rate of the last 30 days is 10.8%, so we're currently above that right now. Also, 718 patients are hospitalized with COVID-19, 191 are in intensive care, and 96 are on ventilators. These are all slightly above the averages of the past 30 days. Let's start off our politics section by talking about how much no-excuse absentee voting is going on already in the state. As of noon on Friday, October 23rd, 918,000 ballots have been issued. 772,000 have been returned. These have blown out the 2016 records, back when we had 503,000 ballots returned. So we are on track to reach a million, folks. Chugga-chugga-chugga-choo-choo. Now, with this news, I also want to share some information from the FBI about foreign countries already trying to meddle in our elections. Looking at you, Iran and Russia. Looking at you. Here is Director of National Intelligence John Radcliffe during a briefing this week on what the FBI and its intelligence community partners are seeing.
We would like to alert the public that we have identified that two foreign actors, Iran and Russia, have taken specific actions to influence public opinion relating to our elections. First, we have confirmed that some voter registration information has been obtained by Iran and separately by Russia. This data can be used by foreign actors to attempt to communicate false information to registered voters that they hope will cause confusion, sow chaos, and undermine your confidence in American democracy. To that end, we have already seen Iran sending spoofed emails designed to intimidate voters, incite social unrest, and damage President Trump. You may have seen some reporting on this in the last 24 hours, or you may have even been one of the recipients of those emails. Additionally, Iran is distributing other content to include a video that implies that individuals could cast fraudulent ballots, even from overseas. This video and any claims about such allegedly fraudulent ballots are not true. These actions are desperate attempts by desperate adversaries. Even if the adversaries pursue further attempts to intimidate or attempt to undermine voter confidence, know that our election systems are resilient, and you can be confident your votes are secure.
So you just heard about the threats and defenses in place to thwart them and safeguard our elections. Now I want to go from the federal level down to the local level here in Columbia, our state's second biggest city and the second biggest county, and what it's doing to ensure there are no problems at the polls. Now, while there have been no threats at this time, Columbia Mayor Steve Benjamin and law enforcement officials briefed reporters this week about the safety plan that they will be implementing on Election Day to prevent any voter intimidation efforts or other problems.
The fact that the right to vote is sacrosanct in this great country, and that we're going to be working together very clear to make sure that there will be no voter intimidation, no voter suppression at the polls on November 3rd. This effort will be nonpartisan. And let me be clear. If you want to vote for President Trump or Vice President Biden or the Libertarian, Green, or Alliance Party candidates on the ballot, it is your right, and we will defend that right. In a democracy, it is essential that every eligible vote must be counted and that the will of the people must prevail.
Richland County Sheriff Leon Lott said laws prevent uniformed officers from being stationed at polling places, but they will be able to deploy quickly to areas should there be any problems.
We're in here together because we're working as a team to make sure that this election on November 3rd have no problems. And I want to reassure everybody out there, we haven't had any indications that we're going to have any problems. So this press conference is not because we've received any information that there's threats or voter intimidation. We're just standing here because we want to make sure that people understand that. Yes, I've gotten some calls, I imagine Chief has too, particularly from senior citizens, just a little bit worried. We want to assure them that for the first time, probably, we are actually working with the Elections Commission to make sure that our traffic is flowing good, our people are standing in line and not being harassed or intimidated. We're actually working a plan now with the Election Commission to make sure that these things don't happen. We can't have deputies or officers stand at polling places. That is against the law for a uniformed officer to be there. However, we're going to be on a very short leash to get there very quickly. If the poll manager and poll workers indicate to us that there's any problems, we'll be able to respond. But at this point, we don't have any indication there's going to be any problems.
Columbia Police Chief Skip Holbrook didn't reveal operational details of the safety plan, but elaborated on what is being done behind the scenes to ensure there are no problems.
We never talk numbers, but what we are reiterating is that we are communicating not only with each other, but throughout the state with other sheriffs and chiefs. With state law enforcement division, we are very much paying attention to intelligence, not only at the state and local level, but at the national level. We talk frequently about that and how that may affect here. So there's nothing that we're not considering, but most importantly, our citizens have to, know that we are fully staffed and prepared to respond in a moment's notice, but we're not going to allow, this perception of anything being unsafe or allow disturbances to occur.
You can always get out and vote early as well, folks. And if you want to vote by mail, you must request an application by Saturday, the 24th of October. That's the day this pod drops, at 5 p.m. So far, we have heard few complaints about early voting, other than some long lines and early delays with the ballots going out. But smooth sailing so far. Now, we haven't really talked about rural broadband expansion efforts in a minute, and I personally look forward to going in-depth on the topic after the election, especially as we approach the end of the year. That is when the roughly $50 million in CARES Act money dedicated to expansion of broadband infrastructure and hotspots has to be spent by. Right now, more than 500,000 South Carolinians lack access to high-speed, reliable internet service. And South Carolina is not alone. Millions nationwide experience the same problems. Broadband expansion was also the focus of one panel discussion during the Richmond Federal Reserve Bank's Investing in Rural America Week. Alex Marr is a regional economist with the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, and he gave an overview during the virtual conference about the state of play facing the country and broadband expansion.
But given all the flaws, what's our best guess of how big a problem the lack of broadband access is? Well, the FCC reports around 20 million Americans lack access to high-speed broadband. Even as a low estimate, that's a sizable portion of the population without access to the economic benefits that broadband access can provide. What's it going to take to solve the problem? Well, we think that addressing the cost funding gap is a central issue for expanding access to areas where there currently is no business case to be made for broadband expansion. In 2018, the FCC estimated that it would cost about $80 billion to provide fiber to all currently unserved Americans. Now, to be clear, this is an estimate to lay fiber to every home in the country that currently doesn't have access to it, and it's the most expensive technology, but fiber is also future-proof. Unlike DSL, fiber lines will not become obsolete as speed demands increase. Are there ways to reduce that $80 billion? Well, one approach would be to take advantage of the economies of scale and scope offered by electrical utilities. These utilities, in many cases, have the backbone fiber already in place, a pool of existing customers, easements and rights of way, and labor to bring to the issue. Now, about 60% of Americans without access to broadband currently get their electricity through an electrical cooperative, but many states have policy barriers to allowing electrical cooperatives to provide broadband. If those were removed, we estimate that allowing those cooperatives to provide broadband could shave $5 to $10 billion off of that $80 billion figure. And again, you'd hit about 60% of the Americans currently without broadband.
And what Alex was talking about there at the end about how the electric co-ops and internet expansion can work hand in hand is something that South Carolina has already approved in the legislature through Act 175. Catherine DeWitt of the Pew Charitable Trust says that the short-term moves, the band-aids that have taken place, such as providing mobile hotspots, may work for some, but only under ideal circumstances, which aren't typically present in rural areas.
These are band-aids, they're short-term solutions that are needed. I mean, there's no, we need short-term solutions, but that doesn't mean that we should lose focus on implementing long-term plans. And I think that it's important to note that these short-term solutions really only work under the best of circumstances. So if you are live in an area that has bad cell coverage, that hotspot isn't going to work. I mean, in the same way that telling people to go park at a library for 3 to 4 to 5 hours a day longer, like these are things that are short-term band-aids that truly only work under the best of circumstances, which is why we do need to be focusing on long-term solutions.
Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond President and CEO Tom Barkin says that the ability to optimize and conduct activities such as education, healthcare, work, and commerce online is key in this day and age. But without a reliable internet, lots of small towns and cities are being written off.
Access is a major challenge in rural areas. This is a complicated issue, or we would have solved it already, but I'm encouraged by the strategies they shared. And never has there been more political agreement on the need. If the country is going to do something, and we should, now is the time. Of course, it's easy to say build it and they will come. But broadband access is far from the entire answer. Small towns that want to change their trajectory also need to put themselves on the map for those looking to relocate. Put differently, there are thousands of small towns competing for the same refugees from bigger cities. Those who win will need a good story. Maybe it's about natural beauty or jobs or housing or local amenities or nearby colleges. As Scott said up front, focus on what your community has. The story is for employers and the story is for talent. The story is also about marketing to those who already live there, not only why one should come, but why one should stay. And I have to say, I'm struck when I go to a small town and hear everyone in the small town speak with one voice.
Barkin says the towns that are making it and getting the attention needed to survive are scrappy and innovative. They have regional partnerships and work together to attract investments. Those are things you can find in lots of small towns across South Carolina, and you better believe they'll be fighting for those investments and to attract new residents. And mark your calendar, folks. Boeing's third quarter earnings come out October 28th at 10:30 a.m. We'll be listening and seeing what they say. Check it out when we do the numbers. So we've discussed mental health challenges a lot during this podcast. especially in our last episode when we heard about the secondary effects of the pandemic involving substance abuse being on the rise. But what about mental health issues facing children? Bobby Connor talks with Dr. Angela LaRosa about increased anxiety in children and adolescents during the pandemic. Dr. LaRosa is a professor of developmental and behavioral pediatrics and is also medical director of the Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics Clinic at MUSC's Children's Health.
Dr. LaRosa, what's the trouble with anxiety? How does it typically impact kids?
The thing about anxiety is that there are varying ways that it is manifested. Some children can be irritable. They can suffer from outbursts or tantrums. They can be more clingy. They may suffer from lack of attention. They may have sleep issues, appetite changes, and then somatic complaints like frequent headaches or frequent stomach aches.
And similar sorts of symptoms for anxiety with teenagers?
I think you see less clinginess in a teenager. Teenagers are more likely to have symptoms of inattention from what some of those early studies are showing. Sleep issues can be a very big problem in adolescents, and then headaches and stomach aches.
What can parents do to help their kids deal with episodes of anxiety as they crop up?
One of the most important things is to keep open communication with your child. And as you're communicating, using open-ended questions, tell me what you're hearing. What are your friends saying? Or what are you seeing on social media to jumpstart those conversations? The other thing that is important is to validate your child's feelings, you know, letting them know that it's okay to have these feelings. And then finally, it's important that parents and caregivers are actually taking care of themselves. And we know adults are suffering more anxiety as well, and children and adolescents pick up on that, and then that can then shape how they feel.
Dr. LaRosa, what are some coping strategies to help kids deal with anxiety?
One of the most important things, I think, is having a routine or a schedule for your child that definitely provides comfort for them. Making sure that your child is getting exercise every day. And I know at the beginning of the pandemic, this was harder because things were shut down. But I talked to families about just taking a walk outside, jumping rope. And there are even some specific meditation apps that are designed for children and adolescents. And there's even a COVID anxiety app that was just recently developed to help young children and adolescents cope with some of their anxieties and fears.
What other concrete things can parents do to help their kids cope right now?
Making sure that you are asking your child how they're feeling, making sure that they have that routine, making sure that they're getting enough sleep. However, if those coping strategies are not effective and you feel that your child is not responding or that you're not able to help them, it is important to follow up with your pediatrician for further screening and evaluation. Some of these children are suffering from true anxiety disorder as opposed to just symptoms of anxiety. And it's very important that that's identified and that they are able to find help with a licensed provider to really work on more cognitive-based strategies.
Remaining safe and active, as well as eating well, are huge factors that can't be underestimated in their ability to improve mental and physical health. So get active, folks, and stay active. It's going to get colder soon. You got to keep walking. I know it's cold. You got to keep walking. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We talk about life during the pandemic and want to hear your stories as well. How you're handling things, if you've contracted COVID-19, if you're working through the unemployment system, or if you're giving back or trick-or-treating, you're going out to Halloween, going on vacation. Tell us how you're getting back to normal, if you're getting back to normal, at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and what's going on. And AT, do we have any new voices? Do we have any voices? Have we secured any more voices like Ursula?
We've secured a voice, yes. Very Ursula-esque. This is Ben from Greenville, an old friend of the pod. Glad he called back in. Let's see what he's up to. Why don't we roll the tape?
All right, Ben from the upstate.
Hey, it's Saturday, and this is Ben from Greenville, South Carolina. Gavin, glad to hear you're coming to the best part of the state. I actually grew up in Columbia and went to college in Greenville. It was just so much better than Columbia. I decided to stay here. And then I started working on my parents and convinced them to come up to Greenville. So, Gavin, we're glad you're coming for a visit. Just wanted to mention that our fall garden, we were concerned that it was going to perish in the unseasonably hot weather we had in September. But it survived that and also survived some caterpillars that got onto some of the plants, and hoping it does well this fall. Because of that warm weather, some of the plants, like the jalapenos, have been producing more fruit than I would have expected, so that's been exciting. When it comes to work, I haven't had to miss a single day of work due to COVID. I've been going to work every day in the office. We've been trying to social distance and wear masks and things like that, and it's been going well. On the school front, our kids are homeschooled, and that because there wasn't anything to do when we got done with the 2019-2020 school year, we waited about a month and got right back into the school in June. So we're pretty far ahead. I teach my first grader social studies, and we are at lesson 81. And so we're making really good progress through our social studies. Appreciate you guys. Do great things. Love that interview from Meg Kennard about the Lindsey Graham race, Jamie Harrison race. Excellent analysis. Thank you. Keep it up.
Well, Ben, I love the regional shade. I love when everyone picks on each other. That's my favorite thing to do. I have to admit, I made some changes in my travel plans. So I ended up in Anderson instead of Greenville. However, I can assume that I will be up in Greenville before this campaign is all over. I'm sure we'll be up there at some point.
100%, yeah.
Because I just did like 1,000 miles last week. I did my gross mileage, which is also gross. But I did. I was like, oh boy, this is a new record. I mean, usually like we can get a state car to go travel, but a lot of this stuff was like last minute. So, and, you know, I can just zip it out and go.
Zippy zap.
You know, having satellite radio versus terrestrial, my biggest gripe.
Satellite radio,
yeah,
terrestrial radio,
say,
my man.
But you'll say, Gavin, public radio is terrestrial, and of course, yes, beautiful public radio. But
beyond that, I mean, you're not.
Beyond
you
me.
Can't listen to
beyond
you
me.
Can't.
Beyond, but beyond me,
I mean, I'm surprised you didn't just listen to the lead the whole way up, whole way down. Yeah,
I actually just listened to silence. I was with my thoughts.
I cried, screamed. No one could tell. I mean, look normal when I cry.
It's one of my best traits. People say,
"Well, but Ben, thank you for calling in. Yeah. I'm glad your plants made it through the blight of caterpillars.
That sounds terrible.
They're terrible. Would you say, Ben, that they are the Columbia of critters?
Oh my god,
disgusting. I like Columbia better. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh yeah, I mean, I like it better than the Low Country and then Greenville too. But
yeah, just it's a real Goldilocks zone of the state, if you ask me.
You know, and having lived in the PD, you know, it's great out there
it's
too.
It's just right.
It's just right for business.
Just right.
But like when we were talking about that that broadband section, you know, I was thinking about the PD and just, you know, they've made such big improvements, specifically in Florence. Like, you know, they have a lot of infrastructure. They put a lot of money back in their community. And these are times when, like, places like that and the surrounding towns are going to be benefiting from, you know, investments because they can bring these guys in. They have a lot of infrastructure. They have a lot of big businesses there. Amenities are coming up and up. So, you know, this is a time for people to shine in the state. And the moment they've probably been waiting for a lot of these places. So
it's kind of a hidden investment until times just like this.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? This and infrastructure stuff that you don't see day to day, but now when you really need it, it's there.
Yeah. I mean, especially, you know, if you're in Florence, you're an hour and change to Myrtle Beach. You know, it's like one of those areas where you have, you're at the intersection of 20 and 95, you have two major hospitals there. I mean, it's one of those hot spots, in my opinion.
You can easily go get crunk in the Dirty Myrtle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Turn it all the way up.
I'm going to go ahead and say the only way to survive Myrtle Beach is just to be a little crunk.
I went to some bar in Myrtle Beach. It's the only time I've ever been to Myrtle Beach. I went to this bar, right?
Only time you were in Myrtle Beach?
Yes.
You've only gone once?
Yes, I've only been once.
Oh, God, we have to go do a live show. I cannot wait till we get out of COVID.
Gavin and I have been saying we need to do a spring
forever.
Break show.
Maybe it's next
Myrtle.
Year. God, I hope it's next year.
God, yeah. Because everyone stay inside till next year just so
please,
we can
get airbrush t-shirts. Go ahead.
So the first time I ever went, I think it was
first
like
and only time.
Broadway at the beach or
yes,
something like
correct.
That. I don't know.
Commerce
I
at
walk
the beach.
I walk into a club, right? And it's this bar club and it's like a honky tonk. It's like people dancing on tables and they're just like cowboys. It was Coyote Ugly. Yeah. Coyote Ugly. And then they were like, oh, no, just keep walking. I was like, I don't want to be here. They're just like, come on, just keep going. My friends who had been there before, obviously. And so we walk further in. And then it turns into like
it's wild.
Just like a regular bar. And I was like, oh, wow, this is weird. It's just like a bar through a bar. And they're like, ah, just keep going. And we go through
the looking
further
glass.
In. And it was like a techno bar with lasers shooting into my eyes, giving me perfect vision. And it was very strange. I was like, I've never been like Inception style three levels deep into a bar with three different bar styles and
so I'm trying
milieus.
To I'm trying to see
strange.
Which one it was, you know. I have it up right now.
Weird.
Up the night here on broadwaythebeach.com. Good Time Charlie's, perhaps.
I think there was a Senior Frogs
there was
there
a Senior
too.
Frogs there. I've been there.
My yeah cousin, it's like across the street from the Senior Frogs, and there was bride to be getting turnt up in that Senior Frogs, and I was like,
understandably,
wow.
Totally understandable. Yeah, my cousin had his bachelor party in Myrtle Beach, and
That's why I was there.
It was just as turnt as that. Maybe it was the Hard Rock. Were you at the Hard Rock Cafe? It's
no,
right across from Senior Frogs.
It was like, I don't remember, okay?
Well, that's
I was a dream within a dream within a dream getting laser eye surgery in a third deep bar.
Yeah, did you have your spinning thimble or whatever?
Yeah, my totem or whatever. Yeah. It was a
What's
lot. My
date?
Totem, obviously, is my complete collection of the extended editions of Lord of the Rings that I was lugging everywhere with
spinning.
Me.
What's the time? What's the date? What's the year?
I've lived several lifetimes in here. Yes.
Definitely.
It was
a lot of people.
And Myrtle, they were telling me there was a boardwalk, and as a Jersey guy, mm-hmm. that's not a boardwalk.
It's a couple blocks.
You can walk on boards, yes. But it's not the boardwalk. It doesn't have the dirty, dirty, dirty.
Well, there's no underside.
Sort of vibe going on.
There's no underside to it. You can't like get under the boardwalk, which is the terror. That's where the real terror is.
That's where the kids hang out. That's where all the homeless people live. It's great. I mean, it's lawless down
there.
Well,
when we were kids, you know, up in we would go to Rehoboth Beach,
yes,
Delaware, and they had, I mean, great boardwalk, great fries,
good
everything
boardwalk,
you want,
yeah.
Candy, rides, arcades. And so you'd put like, you know, we'd get like a dollar snatch and we'd put it up through the boards and snatch it back down with my cousins and stuff like that. One time we found a wallet on the boardwalk. Oh, it was the biggest deal. One time we found a wallet with plenty of money in it. My cousin Patrick finds it. We're like, I don't know, 12, you know, biggest deal ever in your life. Let's go to the arcade and spend all the money. What did we do instead? We turned it into like the lifeguard
That's
station.
Good boys and girls. Good
we turned it
girls.
Into the lifeguard station.
That's right.
And what do you think
those teenage lifeguards definitely stole all that
it?
Stuff. Yeah, 100%. All I know is that Seaside Heights, New Jersey is the greatest boardwalk, worst boardwalk all time. I mean, the Jersey Shore, they ruined it. They were in Seaside, but it was great before that and it's been great afterwards. And if anyone's on Instagram, follow Creatures of Seaside.
Yes.
And when you see the bedlam that they document there, like that is what it's like.
Viewer
it is
warning.
Truly like that.
Viewer warning.
Oh, yeah. You will see some absolute creatures, but that's what it's like to be there.
Yeah.
Once the sun goes down, I mean, the slugs come out. It's gross.
Oh, comparing people to creatures. Oh, well, let us know what you're up to. If you guys are trick-or-treating or what you're trunk-or-treating, which I do not endorse. Don't tell me about those stories because I might say something negative about your experiences.
You walk.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, I guess there has to be like, you know, the no contact way of giving out candy. Just put the bowl out. I'm sure kids will just take one. Everyone always
I throw
just takes
a bowl
one.
At every child that comes to mind. I've been doing it for years.
No one ever comes to mind, so I'm not buying candy this year because I just end up eating it myself, which I can't do anymore. Anyway, I love chocolate, but I'm not supposed to eat it. Thanks again for listening to the pod, y'all. Show us your appreciation by leaving us a review on iTunes or a voicemail at 803-563-7169. And stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. Also, consider becoming an ETV member. Remember, we have the No Pledge Drive Pledge Drive going on right now. They need your support. Membership starts at just $40, and if you pledge at $75, you get access to PBS Passport and all the great programming your donation helps support. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Shut up. Maybe you just need to mute yourself just for your own safety.
No, because I have to be able to tell you to stop and restart.